Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett, the man who knows more about Albany than anyone. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
Ken, let's just jump right into it. Vice President Pence, the man who even the president kids about, or not kids, about being anti-homosexual, comes to Western New York to appear with Republican Representative Chris Collins, for whom he raises $400,000, that's a nice chunk of change. Cuomo blasted the administration for what he calls a death blow to the state if the health care legislation were to pass. Hey, what's going on with health care? Does he have to pass the legislation, or can he administer a death knell to it just with his own executive acts?
Well, he did do an executive order, and there were immediate lawsuits. Surprise, surprise. Some congressional bipartisan agreement was reached, supposedly, on a way to deal with all this. And then the president at first said he supports it, and then he says he doesn't support it. So everything's still up in the air. And certainly all the things we have seen previously, all the iterations of the proposals to repeal and replace Obamacare would have hurt New York. You know, among the states that would have been the most hurt was New York, California as well.
Massachusetts. Where I live, mm-hmm. Connecticut, because of the deductibility of state local taxes.
Well, that's the tax plan, but the health care plan as well. I mean, New York, they canceled the CHIPS program, which is for children's health insurance. There's like 300,000 or so New York state children who would be impacted by that. It's health insurance for kids whose families don't have health insurance.
So think about that for a minute, Ken. You know, a kid walks into with a gun to a bodega and points at somebody, can spend an awful lot of time in jail as a result of that if they catch him. On the other hand, along comes a president of the United States who takes basic health care away from children.
Yeah,
and these aren't children, and some children are going to die as a result of
that. And these aren't even for their parents or families. These are for kids only. It's a program. And that expired on October 1st. And there's talk of bringing it back, but they haven't done it yet. There's cuts to Medicaid that's been proposed. There's all sorts of cuts that would cost billions and billions of dollars. And not only would it, as Cuomo says, hurt potentially New York people, kids and others who don't have insurance, but it would also blow a massive hole in the coming years in the state's budget. So there's a twofold response to.
So I guess I want to talk to you about Christopher Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's a congressman. Correct me if I'm wrong. My memory is quite faulty, but didn't he win office by running against Kathy Hochul, who was the lieutenant governor of New York State?
He did. He did. And even more recently, he was the first congressional Republican to back Donald Trump, which would explain why Pence was there to help him, even at a time when Chris Collins is under investigation for his own ethics. And a bipartisan independent congressional ethics panel suggested he may have broken the law, and that he may have engaged in insider trading with stocks that he was on the board of directors for an Australian biotech company, and he was trying to get people to buy the stocks in Congress. So even this panel has suggested that the full ethics committee of the of Congress look into this, and suggested that federal law might have been violated. Yet here comes Pence and raised him $400,000. And most people saw that as a thank you for being the first one out there and really being the most vocal supporter, especially in New York, of Trump's policies, whether it's tax reform, whether it's health care.
So tell us all a little bit about Buffalo, Niagara, that region of the state. They elect a Republican congressman like Collins over Hochul, who had been the Democrat and is now the lieutenant governor. So is it more conservative than the rest of the state?
It is. His district is one of the most conservative in the state. Don't forget, they elected Collins over Hochul after redistricting, too. So the lines moved, and that district became even more conservative. But that is why when Cuomo, the governor, has threatened to find challengers against him and to go after him in the midterm elections in 2018, he kind of scoffs and says, let him come. He's less popular here, the governor is, than Trump is in that district.
Has Collins got a political, opponent that makes sense? In other words, has the governor found anybody good to run against him?
I don't think we're at that point yet. There was someone who pulled their name out of contention. I think we're not there yet. But the governor has certainly targeted Collins as well as about a half a dozen other New York congressional Republicans who they say would help the Democrats nationally potentially take back the House in 2018 if they can win the bulk or all of those six seats here in New York.
Now, we do know that Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, has been very aggressive about doing something for Buffalo. We have the Buffalo Billion. He was going to put $1 billion, and apparently did, into the region. To me, the ideal candidate to run against him again would be the Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul, because those constituents know her, but she's saying nothing to her.
She said, no, I spoke to her a couple of months ago about that and asked her directly, and she said she could do more as Lieutenant Governor than she could in Congress, which is so gridlocked right now. Maybe she feels she couldn't win, or maybe she really believes that. There are those who think potentially she could reconsider if the governor asks her, but right now the thinking is she'll be running for lieutenant governor for a second time, and they'll have to find someone else. But as is always in politics, it's a long time away, and anything could change.
Well, I love the fact that you are such an insider, Ken Lovett, and understand this so well. But let me see if I get the timeline straight. Let's say he runs again. She's his running mate. She's the lieutenant governor. And in 2020, he runs for president. And if he does, he won't quit. Obviously, he'll run as being the governor. But let's just say he wins and he becomes the president of the United States. She becomes the governor of New York.
Governor Hochul, yes. That would happen. We'll see. I mean, the closest we've come to that in recent times was when Mario Cuomo was considering it, and Stan Lundeen, his erstwhile longtime lieutenant governor, said would have taken over. And at one point after Cuomo, long after Cuomo was out of office, he said one of the reasons was Stan Lundeen came up to him and said, please, I don't want to become governor. And Lundeen came out and went, that never happened. And then, of course, Malcolm Wilson, who became governor, was the longtime lieutenant governor to Nelson Rockefeller. And when Rockefeller resigned in anticipation of running for national office, he moved up. So that was, and then, of course, the last time we've had a lieutenant governor move up was David Paterson. When Elliot Spitzer.
And look what happened to him.
When Elliot Spitzer resigned in disgrace and Paterson became governor. So it has happened, but not so much for national office. We haven't seen that in a long time.
Okay, into all of the mix comes, as we all know, reading about Harvey Weinstein and, sexual predators. Into all of this comes Melissa DeRosa, who is a top aide to Governor Andrew Cuomo.
The top aide.
The top aide. And she says that she's personally experienced sexism and harassment during her career, including an inappropriate sexual comment from someone who is now a national leader in progressive politics. Now, Ken Lovett, if there's one thing I know about you, you're a hound dog, and you are after, you want to find out who that national progressive leader was. You got any ideas?
No, I don't have that as of now. But look, I completely believe it. I mean, what she said was when she was working, I think it was for a lobbying firm at the time.
It was.
That her boss was on the phone on a conference call with somebody who turned out, years later to become a national progressive leader. But he said something about, her boss said something about, well, Melissa DeRosa is going to be the lead on the media for this project. And the person said something to the effect of, oh, she could lead me to her hotel room. And he didn't know that DeRosa was listening in on the phone. So, yeah, now look, we all know stories of lawmakers going after interns and going after staff members in an inappropriate way. I've seen it personally. One story I always kind of tell, and it's a simple one, but, I was walking with a female reporter after a press conference, and we passed by the Senate chambers, and one of the sergeant of arms, I happened to be walking a little bit ahead, says hello to me. And then as the female reporter walked by, he looks and goes, you should smile. You look so much better when you smile. And I turned to her and I said, he would never say that to me. So there's, institutional sexism. There's outright predator behavior that we've all seen here. You know, I've heard rumors about every female reporter having affairs with their sources, which I don't believe, but never I very rarely, if ever, hear it about male reporters. It's just a really tough place Albany is for women. So when the secretary to the governor, which is basically his chief of staff, comes out and tell those stories, I do believe them.
Well, absolutely. But of course, this is all complicated by the fact that there are genuine hookups. Senators who hook up with other senators. We have seen that, right, in the past, and we know it, and it's been unashamed. So it all gets very complicated.
It does, but it's also a different era now. It's things that were appropriate or at least people turned a blind eye to in the past, not so much anymore. And
there was something called the Bear Mountain Compact. Remember that whole thing?
Yeah, which basically said whatever happens, if you're from New York City, once you go to Albany, whatever happens above Bear Mountain stays there, kind of like whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I'll tell you, one time for me, I had lost a lot of weight and I went onto the Senate floor. And a senator called me over, who I won't say who, and he says, Ken, come here. We've been talking a lot about you lately. And I said, really? What are you talking about? He says, well, we figure you dropped all the weight because you have someone on the side. And I just kind of was stunned, and I looked at him, and I said, that says a lot more about you, Senator, than it says about me, because I was just stunned that that's the first place they went to.
Well, that's where their minds
are. And it was untrue, just for the record.
Let's talk a little bit about a very interesting thing. The Republicans are now trying to get somebody to run against Andrew Cuomo. And I have to say, the same old folks who they've been looking at don't do it for me. Although this week you have a story about Mark Molinaro running for governor. And he's a guy I know very well. He's a Dutchess County executive, and he's filed his papers with the State Board of Elections to run in 2018. I know him, and I suspect this is a guy who could catch fire.
He is someone who is very well thought of among Republican ranks. I did a column a few weeks ago, and one really prominent Republican county chairman said to me about Molinaro that it's probably not his time in 2018, but he's got a real future, you know, statewide. But this person really liked Harry Wilson. Here's a guy, he's a business turnaround expert. He ran. He's a business turnaround expert. He served on President Obama's when he formed that task force to save the car industry. He's a Republican, but he also probably best known in electoral circles as the guy who ran in 2010 against Tom DiNapoli for state controller. He lost, although he did a good job. He's got a lot of money, which is enticing to a lot of Republicans. He's been going around the state talking to people. He said he will decide probably in the next few weeks, by the end of the year for sure, whether he's going to get in or not. But a lot of Republicans like the idea that this is a guy who, when he ran for comptroller, put $7 million of his own money in, and now he's telling people he'll put at least $10 million of his own money into a governor's race should he do it. Which, you know, going in, Cuomo already has $26 million in the bank as of July. None of the Republicans has any money except Wilson, unless you count Carl Paladino, but no one's taking that seriously in terms of him making another run like he did in 2010.
The guy that I was looking at for a while, who I thought really could have done some damage to Andrew Cuomo, was Chris Gibson, the congressman from the 19th District. I know for a fact that he went around and he talked to all the Republican leaders, and they said, no way. They gave him the same kind of line you were just talking about, which is, you may have something in the future, but you don't have it now. Don't they want to win?
Gibson is one of those guys who, it kind of reminded me of Rudy Giuliani when he ran for president. Or, you know, Gibson is one of those guys who probably would have done better in a general election against Cuomo than he would have in a primary. First of all, that goes, I don't know if he can raise money. You know, I don't know what his base is in terms of that. But assuming he could, he was a very attractive candidate. He's a military guy, very smart, more moderate, which would help, in a general. But the problem is the primary electorate for the Republicans is very conservative. So it's very difficult for someone who has more moderate views, even though that could help them in a general election, win a primary.
Nelson Rockefeller found out, Mr. Bloomberg found out, and so many other Republicans, John V. Lindsay found out, it's tough if you're a moderate Republican to win.
It is, and getting tougher. And it's that which makes that's the conundrum for the Republicans, because you're seeing fewer and fewer Republicans in the state. They're just kind of shrinking, and yet they're getting more and more conservative. And so what you end up having is it's hard for someone who can actually win a statewide race to win the primary. And thus they put up some conservative people who can't win. And when people say, well, you know, New York hasn't had a Republican win a statewide race since George Pataki won re-election to a third term in 2002. So we're going on 15 years now. We haven't had a Republican win a statewide race. That's a big reason for it.
And yet, Ken Lovett of the Daily News, we know that third time elections for governors are tough. And this is a third time election for Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, I would argue that the election isn't as tough as the actual third term and serving it. New York has been brutal. You've got George Pataki won a third term, and it was a horrible third term. Mario Cuomo won a third term. It was a horrible third term. We've seen that with mayors as well in New York City.
Which they can't do anymore unless, of course, their name is Bloomberg and they buy a third term.
And Mario Cuomo once said, it's a fourth term, that's a killer to win. But Mario Cuomo once said to me way back when that the second you win election and you take your seat in that office, you start losing friends. And so by the third term, particularly, people are tired of you already, especially on the inside. This governor, given the 24-hour news cycle and social media, there's almost an end of the third term feel on the inside rather than end of a second term. And it's starting to spread to the public, but his numbers are still solid. They're not in the stratosphere like they were the first two terms, but they're still solid, and he's still going to be very tough to beat with the money he has, with the poll numbers, and just with the makeup of Democrats in the state.
Apropos of nothing, as my father used to say, the interesting thing to me is how I asked Mario Cuomo one time, and I said, well, you've appointed all these people, they owe you a lot. He said, no, every time, it goes to your point, every time you appoint somebody, you get 1,000 people who hate you for not having appointed them, and one ingrate. I always love that quote.
Absolutely. and it's really true, and it's brutally honest. Look, the governor, in all likelihood, now anything could change. We've got trials coming up involving people close to him, so anything could change. But the governor, if anything, would have a harder time potentially with a Democratic primary than he will with a Republican challenger.
Knows that.
Yeah, and those on the left are really going after him. They really would like to see somebody. However, the governor has made a distinction of that, basically the people on the left who are mad at him, he calls, or his people call, the professional left. Those are the paid lobbyists, the paid activists. And, if you look at the poll numbers, he does have somewhat of a point in that his numbers among liberals are very good. They're in the mid-60s, if not a little higher. His numbers in New York City, where you would have to win a primary and do really well, are sky high. They dwarf those of Mayor de Blasio, who's about to cruise to re-election. So, yes, there is unhappiness with him on the left, but I think overall the liberal electorate is ready to, as of right now, the numbers show they're ready to re-elect him. Now, could that change? Absolutely. And that's what people are watching. Starting in January with the trial of, Joe Prococo, his former top aide, the guy who he once said is like a brother to him.
Third brother who Mario loved the most.
Yeah. And that so his corruption trial is coming up. There's another corruption trial coming up related to the governor's upstate economic development plans and projects. So things could easily change. And that's what people are watching. But and he is going to have a harder time if there is a primary. But right now, at this very moment where we stand, he'd probably win.
I agree with you. Okay, let's go to the Constitutional Convention. Boring. we talk about it a great deal on the air. Our Capital Connection program, we just did a half an hour interview with Gerald Benjamin, a fierce advocate for it, an old friend of mine, explaining it all. I think it comes down to sort of, are you a pessimist or are you an optimist? If you're an optimist, you say, these guys get together and they do things like initiative and referendum, or they do something like putting a hold on how many times you can run for office, term limits. They ain't going to do that. And my feeling as a pessimist is, in control of the selection process are the same old guys who control the selection process for who runs for the legislature.
The irony is the argument in favor of a constitutional convention is this is the best way to clean up Albany. Albany is corrupt. They won't clean themselves up. So let's do a constitutional convention. And then the flip side is, yes, and then you vote for a constitutional convention and the very people you're criticizing for not cleaning up Albany are going to be in charge of it.
Exactly.
And it's going to be all the same special interests. So that is the conundrum. And you have almost every major interest group, whether it is the legislative leaders, whether it is whether it's the labor unions, whether how many issues bring together the conservative party, the Right to Life party, and those who are looking to expand abortion. it is crazy, but everyone is afraid that once you open up the Constitution, one of the other side is going to try and spend a lot of money. So if you're someone who favors abortion, you're afraid that the other side is going to try to limit abortion. If you support if you're against abortion, you're afraid that they're going to strengthen abortion laws.
If you're a labor union,
you're afraid that they're going to get rid of your pension benefits, and you're afraid they're going to get rid of all sorts of worker protections. So in the end, they've all come out against it. And you have some advocates like Jerry Benjamin. You have
Hank DeLay.
You have some people who are for it. But
Bill Samuels.
I would assume you're going to see a ton of money in the next couple of weeks when the opposition to it will start running ads and all sorts of other things.
Well, it's very seductive to say, okay, yes, but, maybe, just maybe they'll get something done and it really will make for a better constitution.
Well, from that argument, if you have a constitutional convention, and even DiNapoli's against it, saying it would be too expensive, but you have a constitutional convention, they come up with a slate of recommendations that they'd like to see passed, but it still has to go back to the voters. Those recommendations have to be signed off on by the voters. So the last time, every 20 years, voters say, yay or nay, should we even hold a convention? The last time we held a convention, an actual convention, was 1967, and none of the recommendations got approved. So it went down, and that was the end of it.
And of course, the proponents have all kinds of excuses for that, but nevertheless, you're exactly right. I do see that Cyrus Vance, the DA in New York, is in a lot of trouble right now because he took a lot of money from Harvey Weinstein and then didn't proceed to indict him for something a lot of pros think he should have been indicted for.
Yeah, Cy Vance is the luckiest guy in some respects because he doesn't have an opponent or a real opponent. He has two write-in candidates. But These stories that have come out, not just with Weinstein, but also he apparently was investigating Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr., the kids, two of the kids to President Trump, for real estate issues, and they didn't bring charges, and a little while later got a big donation from the Trump's personal lawyer, the president's personal lawyer. This was before he was president. This was 2012, I think. And then it turned out he investigated Harvey's office, looked into Harvey Weinstein and whether he sexually assaulted an Italian model and didn't bring charges and then got money again from the lawyer right afterwards. And it's brought up an interesting debate. Not only did whether or not these donations impacted his decision not to bring charges, but also should district attorney statewide be able to receive donations from defense lawyers and defense firms that have business before their or potential business before their offices.
Money talks, all others walk. End of wonderful session once again with our very good friend Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News. This has been the Capital Connection. Ken, as always, I just want to thank you for spending all this time with us.
Oh, great to be here. Thanks.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.